everybody, this is B-Sol of the Vault of Horror, and you are once again tuned in to Conversations in the Dark, which is part of the greater entity known as the Vaultcast. And tonight, we will be discussing one of the underrated gems of 90s horror cinema with somebody who is one of its greatest supporters, admirers, defenders, champions. The film, Popcorn. The defender, Christy Jett. Welcome to Conversations in the Dark, Christy Jett.
Thank you, B-Sol. I feel like we're actually on trial, and I'm like the...
I know.
I'm the attorney.
This is going to be a particularly silly edition of Conversations in the Dark. I warn you in advance. But to step back for just a moment, for those of you who may not know, all three of you, Christy Jett is the horror wonder child who is one of the masterminds behind such entities as the Blood Sprayer, which is bloodsprayer.com, as well as Fright Rags, where you can get lots of really incredible horror t-shirts, which, unlike me, you will have to pay for when you get them. And it is fright-rags.com, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and Christy also writes for two very obscure little horror websites that you may have heard of, Dread Central and Fangoria.com. But enough of that, enough of all that. We're here to talk about Popcorn, and I do not mean Orville Redenbacher, ladies and gentlemen. I'm talking about the movie that actually does have one of my favorite taglines ever, which is, "Buy a bag, go home in a box." Which I always loved. And I just want to say, yes, I'll just say this right off the bat, because I saw this movie originally when it first came out. I think I might have, when it first came out on video. I know everybody's fascinated to learn the format on which I first saw the movie, but I saw it when it first came out on video, and I did enjoy it, but I can't claim to be the expert that Ms. Jett is on this film. So I'm actually very interested to hear a lot of what it is that you... Not to say, I mean, I do like it, but I'm interested to hear what you have to say about it, because it is very underrated, and it's not a movie you hear a lot of people talking about, which is probably unfair. But tell me a little bit about what it is about this particular movie that strikes such a chord with you.
Well, let's back up a little bit. If we're going to talk about how I first saw it, when I was a kid.
No, I didn't ask you that. I'm not. That's not the question that you were asked. No. Okay. Yes. All right. Please continue.
Ever Connecticut. Shut up.
Go for it.
I first watched it on video when I was a kid. You know, I definitely have fond memories of, you know, going to the local video store. And you see all these awesome boxes, and I just remember seeing this very quote-unquote iconic cover that is a skeleton holding up a girl's face as a mask. And, you know, that was the reason that I bought it, rented it, whatever. And I just remember just loving it so much the first time through. And you know, just to sort of add to that before I really go into details about the film, it's kind of funny that this hasn't been, I mean, there is a cult following for it, but the fact is it actually was written and for a short time directed by, somebody who's fairly well known in the horror business, a guy named Alan Ormsby.
Yes.
And he's responsible for writing and directing, shit, maybe I'm wrong about that. I know he
did Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. That's how I know him.
He wrote that, and I was thinking of Bob Clark, who actually directed it. But he wrote it, and he also worked with Bob Clark on Death Dream and also Deranged, which I just found that out today, actually, when I was looking up some information. But I mean, that's one thing to keep in mind. I mean, Bob Clark, who of course is responsible for, like, you know, Porky's and things like that, and also A Christmas Story. He and Alan Ormsby were really good friends. They worked together a lot. And Alan Ormsby was actually the director up until a few months in, And then under mysterious circumstances, they don't really talk about it. I'm going to assume there were issues with the other producers, and Ormsby stepped down and they hired Mark Harrier to take it over. But that's just one thing that I always find quite interesting about it. Is the fact that, you know, there are some kind of prominent people involved in it. And even in, in the acting, the film itself, I mean, it stars Dee Wallace, and Ray Walston has a cameo in it, a very, very prominent actor. And also a lot of, not a lot, but at least a couple of fairly well-known, I don't want to say cult movie actors, but especially horror movies in the 80s and 90s, they were quite prominent, like Jill Sholin and Kelly Jo Minter. Yes. Go ahead.
No, I was going to mention her, actually, that she was obviously Nightmare on Elm Street, Dream Child, but a lot of people know her from lots of different projects from that era, so she was someone that popped out. For me, for yes. Sure. But Ray Walston, I mean, got I, of course, my favorite Martian is what I think of when I think of Ray Walston. But I'm sure a lot of people also think of Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Mm-hmm. I'm not the biggest fan of that movie, which is another reason why people will hate me, in addition to my not liking Goonies. But
probably another reason why I shouldn't have done this interview at all, actually. Oh, because
there's a long list of those reasons, yeah.
Credits you completely now.
No, Dee Wallace, of course, E.T.'s mother, stepmother, as we all know, who I once stood in line behind at airport security, which I think is a great story. Most people don't, but there you have it.
She calls me babe.
Really? She calls me nothing, so.
Well, when I met her at Monstermania a couple of years ago, of course, I was the dork who was all like, hey, I love popcorn. Tell me about popcorn. And her remark was, I'm going to try to take this as close to context as I can, but she said her fondest memory, or not even fondest, her most prominent memory was the fact that it smelled as though every person in Jamaica had taken a piss in the theater where that was filmed.
That's lovely.
I know, right?
Well, actually, there's one other thing, too, that I wanted to jump back to, because you had mentioned Alan Ornsby, and he's one of the guys, I mean, that I, you know, looking back on it now, at the time, I wasn't as much in the know about these sort of things, but I mean, that's probably one of the things that most recommends this movie, because he's one of those kind of unsung heroes of horror, you know, I mean, in all seriousness. A big part of that for me is the movie Deranged, which you mentioned, because I find that to be, in my opinion, it's one of the most underrated horror movies I can think of. And anytime somebody asks me to, you know, mention my picks for the most underrated horror movies, I always will mention that movie. And, I mean, I used to, when I had Monsters HD, if you remember the old Monsters HD channel, which was a godsend, by the way, they used to show that all the time on there. And I would watch it every chance I got, and I love the fact that the guy who plays basically Ed Gein in that movie is
Robert Blossom.
Yes, is the creepy old man from Home Alone. I just think that that is one of the greatest movie connections ever. So
bring me back something French.
Yeah, exactly. No, but I mean that movie. Talk about, you know, Ed Gein is one of the most influential figures in terms of horror movie history. So many different characters and movies were inspired by him. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Psycho, and whatever else. But I think the one that is the most faithful to the real story is Deranged, which is one of the reasons why I enjoy that movie so much, because it sticks rather closely to the real-life events. And but again, I mean, not stray too far from popcorn, but I mean, just the fact that, you know, Ormsby has a lot of horror credibility with me for projects like that. Cat People, I think you mentioned that he scripted the Paul Schrader remake of Cat People. I mean, the guy knows his stuff. So obviously, people who do not realize how important a horror movie popcorn is, there's something wrong with these people. And I think we need to figure out what it is.
That is true. I mean, and the fact that he wrote it, it definitely lends not only to the credibility, but, you know, especially when you're watching this film, it's a very well-written film. And that is one thing I will definitely argue people with, because it is definitely well-written, and it definitely has one of the greater movie villains, really. And granted, I know, I don't know if it's been a while since you've seen the film, but the villain, he's somebody, it's one of those psychological stories. You could harken it back to Jason Voorhees, really, you know? Yes. It's somebody, you know, and granted, I'm assuming that people are expecting spoilers, so it's okay for me to give spoilers, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, don't get me started on the spoiler thing, please. That's really one of my pet... See, a lot of people have pet peeves about movies getting spoiled. My pet peeve is about people who complain about movies getting spoiled. Like, I don't know. Once I passed the age of 12, I really started caring less and less about that. Apparently, most people have this major hang-up that they will act as if you ran over their cat if you spoil a movie for them. For me, the details of plot are far less important than so many other things about a movie. So whatever. Never mind the fact that this movie is 20 years old. So if you have a problem with spoiling this movie, you know what? Just go listen to another podcast. So, Christy Jett, please, tell me all that you want to tell me about the plot of Popcorn.
Go right ahead. I digress.
Yes. No, I digress. Now, you can...
I'm just trying to get you to admit it. So, anyway.
No, that is all I ever do is digress.
All right. So, I'll give a quick history or a quick plot of the film Popcorn. It starts on a university campus, and, you know, there's these horror film dweebs, you know, who are in the film department, and in order to raise money for their department, they decide to put on an all-night horror-thon, and from the beginning, it's something that's suggested via the teacher and this uber-nerd student named Toby. He's kind of the, you know, the dork of the class. He's the guy who you could see is probably secretly in love with the pretty girl who's Jill Sholin, but more than anything is sort of, you know, lusted after by, I believe, oh, shit, whatever. The girl, I always try to call her Yvette, but I think that's her real name. Whatever the case is, the blonde chick. So in any event, it starts off with that. And it pretty quickly goes into the whole idea of them, preparing for this horror-thon at this theater that's about to be torn down. Within the first 15 minutes, you're already at the horror-thon, really. They use gimmicks from the old William Castle age. They use 3D for a film on a fly. Or a mosquito, is it? Christ, it's a mosquito. I've watched this film like 300 times, and I can't believe I just screwed that up. Anyways, so they have 3D, and they have a huge mosquito that comes into the audience and freaks them all out. They also have Odorama. They have a electric shock in the seats. Very William Castle-like elements, and I can only assume a lot of that is based on Ormsby's experience. I mean, that's something that he obviously grew up with, not to mention the fact that, you know, at the time, I'm sure that a lot of teenagers who would have been going to a film at that time, that would have been something very perfectly gimmicky for them that they were not familiar with at all. Whatever the case is, it's revealed that Maggie, who is Jill Sholin's character, the lead actress, she's been having these nightmares and these visions of this, you know, sort of creepy old Jesus-looking dude, really. And over time, she comes to find out that the guy that she's been dreaming of is somebody who actually, is a real person. Turns out that he was a cult director back in the 70s, and he wasn't very happy with the criticism that his films would get. So what he did is he filmed, a creepy experimental film, and he decided that he was going to film the ending live in public. Well, the ending of the film was that he was going to kill his wife and daughter in front of a live audience. Well, the aunt of said daughter and mother decided, obviously, she wasn't going to let that happen, and she shot this guy. His name is Lanyard Gates, by the way. Shoots him and saves the daughter. Unfortunately, the mother is already dead, and she sets fire to the entire theater. Well, in doing that, she ends up, unintentionally killing and disfiguring a lot of people unintentionally. Well, it turns out by the end of this film, we find out the person who is terrorizing the Horror Fest, who is terrorizing Maggie, is somebody who was in that fire. Mm-hmm. It turned out to be Toby, who is the film nerd. And another thing that's really amazing about this film are the prosthetics that are used. I mean, sort of the whole idea of popcorn is that this killer, he can change masks quite easily. Well, turns out that Toby is quite versed in doing quick change prosthetic. He kills people and then makes masks of their faces in order to take on their persona. The one thing, of course, you know, and granted, of course, there's got to be a suspension of disbelief with this film. But a couple of things that really stick out are the fact that, you know, he seems to be able to change his voice quite easily with use of a voice changer. And, of course, this is before the era of Scream, where, you know, easily, oh, we can just change our voice and we'll just sound like whoever. It's totally cool. But this is something that, you know, back in 91, that was an invention of this film. Not an invention of this film, not like it never happened before. But that was, you know, one of the things that was, people were sticklers with for this film. And also there is a supernatural element near the beginning of the film. There's a scene where you know, we find Dee Wallace's character at the theater when nobody else is there, and she's supposed to be meeting up with Lanyard, who she thinks at that point is still alive because that's one of the personas that Toby has taken on. Well, she goes to the theater and she finds you know, the sort of the marquee explodes and all the letters go popping off. And then all of a sudden it flashes up with The Possessor, which is the name of Lanyard's short film that really ended his life. So there are some supernatural elements, but, you know, there are some fairly creepy scenes. There are definitely a lot of good effects. And, you know, call me crazy, there are some really good performances in the film. I mean, you've got Jill Sholin, for one, and Kelly Jo Minter, and Dee Wallace, and there are just three actresses right there who are really indicative of the era of which they became most famous. Obviously, Dee Wallace was around before then, but there are three actresses right there who were huge at the time, and they're all in this film, all great actresses. But yeah, I mean, that's just a basic sort of rundown of the whole deal of popcorn there.
You know what would be, you know what would be great, before I say anything to that, if I was just like it off in the kitchen, like making a sandwich while you, and didn't hear any of that, and just came back and was like, okay, and go. No, but that is not the case. So, but actually, one thing you mentioned all the way at the beginning, the character of Toby, which is, for me, the most memorable thing about the movie, that maybe it's because I related to Toby. But anyway, he kind of reminded me, I don't know if this is just me, he sort of reminds me of Shelley from Friday the 13th, Part 3.
Just like, but not nearly as annoying.
No, well, few people are. Although, I don't want to, again, I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but that character in that movie always really bothered me, not because he himself is annoying, which he is. I could never understand, you know, I mean, like, from a writing point of view, and I should never approach a Friday the 13th movie from a writing point of view, I could never understand the point of having that character and building up his crisis and having it reach absolutely no resolution whatsoever, for good or ill. He's just killed, and that's it. It's like, I just can't, that's one of my problems with slasher movies. I don't want to dwell on that, but it's like they introduce these characters with all of their eccentricities and various character arcs that just go nowhere and serve no purpose whatsoever. And he's my favorite example of that, because I'm like, well, but Shelley deserves redemption. He doesn't deserve to be slaughtered in such a heinous fashion. But anyway,
well, he totally did. That kid was so annoying, and he never knew when to shut up.
Yeah, but if it wasn't for him, Jason would not have a hockey mask. I think he deserves something for that. Something.
Whatever. I'm not going to have this argument on the popcorn podcast.
He's just a nice Jewish boy who wants love, and he gets killed by Jason. This should not.
You don't think that Toby's Jewish? Let's think about Toby for a minute, okay? First of all, the actor who plays him, Tom Villard, He's actually from the Rochester area, believe it or not.
Really?
He's from a town about 20 minutes outside of Rochester called Spencerport. Unfortunately, he passed away a few years ago due to complications with AIDS.
I didn't know that.
And granted, this is something when I first started to get into the whole cult of popcorn, really. It's something that I looked up, and I'm intrigued the fact that, I'd like to see if his parents are still in the area. I'd love to talk to them, and just sort of get an idea about him in general. I mean, it is sad now, especially in this day and age where retrospective documentaries are such a huge, I don't want to say business, I don't like that term, but it's such a huge gold mine for fans, really.
I'm sorry, before you continue with that, because I know where you're going, I just want to make it clear now, because this is the other thing that I wanted to get into with regards to this movie, and it's something that I think is fascinating, and hopefully other people that are out there and love this movie, like you, and kind of are frustrated with the lack of, I don't know what the support or whatever it is, or connection or fandom, I guess would be the word, that this movie has. I want to get into this whole idea that you've mentioned about helping to bring about some type of retrospective or documentary or a special release of this film, which I'd have to agree that it deserves. So yeah, I mean, talk a little bit about that, about the whole dream that you have of what will happen with Popcorn on Video.
Well, here's the thing. Back in 2001, Elite Entertainment, which I believe has now been absorbed into Anchor Bay, I'm pretty sure that's where Elite went when they went under, but released in 2001, out of print now, horribly expensive to get on Amazon or on eBay. I lucked out a few years ago before it went out of print. I just bought this on deep discount for like $7. So I really lucked out. I was really happy. It was my first online purchase. I remember that. I was pretty proud of myself. So here's the deal. So it's out of print now. I've been asking around for literally the past year. I haven't gotten anywhere, really. I keep bugging certain people in the quote-unquote industry who I know have the inside on this. I'm not getting anywhere, unfortunately, so I want to reach out more to people. I created like a Facebook group for Popcorn, and just saying, hey, we're trying to push for a retrospective documentary, a DVD re-release, and I haven't, my own fault, I have so many other things going on. I haven't been dedicating myself as much as I should, but now more than ever, I'm going to be doing that. Like, I'm going to be pushing for this. And on top of that, over the past 2 years, a friend of mine, Mike Kenny, who's a huge horror nerd, he also shares the same love for Popcorn. He's very interested in working on a retrospective. And then more than anything, my friend Mike D from Tipped Off Cupcake Productions, He's actually making a documentary right now about horror hosts down south where he's from. He's from Tennessee, I believe. And he's making a documentary right now. So he's very versed in doing that. So I have all the pieces really to do it. We just need to, A, figure out who has the rights. And if we could work on, getting a re-release, doing a retrospective with the re-release, and then raising some money just to make the documentary. We're not looking to make any money off of this. That's the biggest thing that I want to make clear. We just want to do it where, we're getting it out there for people who really need to experience this film, as the rest of us did. I mean, we grew up with it. I especially grew up with it. I was 10 when it came out. It's a huge part of my childhood, which I know is weird to say, but this film, it means a lot to me. I quote it on too regular of a basis. I mean, it's almost an inside joke at Fright Rags, because the first day that I met Ben, one of my first questions were, when are you going to make a Popcorn shirt? And it still goes on to this day. Although the cool part is, he has promised me we are making an original Popcorn shirt. It's just a matter of when.
And but you're talking about, to clarify for the laity, you're talking about Ben Scrivens, who is the owner of Fright Rags. Yes.
This is true. My apologies. My boss, my cohort, Ben Scrivens. So the point to be made is, what we want to do is we want to push for a re-release, because it is a shame this is out of print. Well, you know, a lot of really great films have gotten really beautiful re-releases, such as The Monster Squad and Gate, a lot of 80s and after that 90s horror films that have been re-released. You know, Mad Men is coming out soon. You know, even the Friday the 13th series got a reboot, you know,
yes.
Not a reboot, a revamp, so to speak. So okay. We'll put it this way. It's now, next year is the 20th anniversary of Popcorn. The time is right now, and we need to do this, and I want to make it happen. So there, that's that.
And can I, actually, I'm curious, because I'm asking this, I don't want to put you on the spot. I'm assuming you probably know the answer, though. I mean, when was the last time that this movie was released on video?
2001.
Okay, so you do know. 2001. All right, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't understand. I mean, why do you think it's been, you mentioned so many other movies that have gotten a better treatment. I mean, for I don't think anybody out there is going to say, you know, that, well, The Gate, as much as I love that movie, is just, oh, so clearly a superior film to Popcorn. I really don't think that's a debate that anybody's going to get into. I mean, it just seems so random and ambiguous, you know? The one thing I will say is, I think The Gate is probably, to me, what Popcorn is to you, meaning it's just this weird little underrated horror movie that I have very fond memories of seeing when I was a kid, and I just never forgot about it. And yeah, I love it far too much than I should, or far more than most people would. And I also put in that category, by the way, the movie Terror Vision, which I would love. I could probably do an entire podcast about that movie, just like we're doing here. But that's neither here nor there. Popcorn. Why? Why is it? What is the? Why is this movie so neglected? What is the cause?
Well, believe it or not, I won't say, and granted, I'm probably speaking out of school on this one. I might be wrong, but I think with some of the issues with Alan Ormsby coming off the project, I believe near the end, I can't even say for sure that Bob Clark really attached. Perhaps. Perhaps it could have done something with that, and the studio maybe wanted to bury it a little. I mean, when you think about it, people actually are, how do I say this correctly? People, I think, are, studios maybe pushed The Gate a little bit more, or perhaps the fact that The Gate somehow got better exposure in the video store. Perhaps The Gate is just more of a memorable film.
I think I know what it is.
I don't really know how to explain that.
I think what it comes down to is the presence of the song Cruel Summer by Bananarama in The Gate. I think that's really what makes the difference.
You know what makes the difference, why Popcorn is supremely better, is the fact that it was shot entirely in Jamaica, and there are amazing reggae themes throughout the entire film, and I like that. But anyways, and the funny thing is, as we're sitting here, I was just double-checking something on Wikipedia, which is my term for Wikipedia, and, you know, it does say indeed, you know, the Entertainment released DVD edition of Popcorn in 2001. The DVD has been discontinued as of 2010. It went out of print before then. Wikipedia is wrong about that. And it says there have been no plans to re-release the DVD. So, I mean, that, again, it's Wikipedia. You can't necessarily trust everything that it says. But, hell, I'm fine with there being no plans, because I'm making plans. I'm making plans to re-release this bitch.
You just want to get your name added to the Wikipedia entry on Popcorn. That's really what this is all about. And then in the year 2010, thanks to the efforts of Christy Jett, the movie Popcorn was re-released on DVD. We could just go in there and say whatever we want. That's the great thing about Wikipedia. I think after we finish this, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to change it to the year 1647 that Popcorn was released on DVD. And I'll see how long it stays that way.
You know what? Or you could just add that I am starting a personal campaign to get this film re-released and to have a respect documentary made.
You know what? That totally should be added on there because that's an actual fact.
It is. Why don't you do that? Heck, why don't you do it right now while we're sitting here? I'll let you. I won't even stop you. Go ahead.
Well, A, I don't know how, and I'm talking out of my ass. And B, I will try. But, yes, yeah, so popcorn. Again, what I'd like, as I wrap this up, as I attempt to propagate lies on Wikipedia, I just want to make it clear, though, that even though, you know, I obviously don't have the same familiarity with the movie that Christy has, but I do recognize, having seen it a couple of times in my day, that it is a very deserving horror cult classic, and I do call it a cult classic because it does have that kind of a following, and I have been aware of it. It's one of those movies that always pops up when people are... Okay, there's that noise again.
No pun intended.
Yeah, it's one of those things that... Those movies that always pops up when people talk about... When people talk about underrated and not forgotten, but underappreciated horror movies, it's one of those names that always pops up so that you have to believe that there really are a lot of people out there. There's, you know, a silent majority, minority, whatever, out there that just really does like this movie. And so obviously when you do try to do this, I think you're going to find you have a lot of support because you're not the only one, obviously, who's into this movie in a big way. So I think it deserves to be better recognized, and I hope that it happens.
Here's the other thing to keep in mind also, okay? If I go right now and I take a look at the Facebook page that I created for it, you know, I'm looking, and I didn't really promote this to my friends as well as I would have. There are only 54 of my friends that are members of this fan page, and there are 155 people who are members. So that leads me to believe, obviously, there are people out there, you know, who want that. You know, I specifically put in the header here, we're looking to divert interest, you know, into a special edition DVD, including retrospective documentary to coincide with the 20th anniversary in 2011. So there are at least 100 more people than I would assume, you know, joined. We'll put it that way.
And let's mention, too... I'm sorry, I just want to mention how people can find that page on Facebook, because hopefully you will have more than that after, you know, popcorn fans give this a listen. So, I mean, if people just search for popcorn on Facebook, will they find this page easily, or is there a better way to find it?
That is the best way, actually, or you can put popcorn movie, but it's just a picture of the DVD cover right now. And then when you look at it, it says right in the sidebar, you know, it talks about the special edition DVD we're looking to make. And yeah, I mean, another thing to just keep in mind is fan pushing is what made a lot of different projects come into view. Namely, I'm looking at Night of the Creeps and The Monster Squad. They're two DVDs that were made because there was such fan demand. So this kind of thing can happen. It's not impossible. That's just something else I want to stress.
Yes, and I also want to thank the special DVD release of Monster Squad for helping me to realize that I also didn't enjoy that movie as well as I thought I did when I was a little boy. So there's another reason for people to hate me. Added to the list of The Goonies and Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I think you need to be careful.
Why are you such a downer?
I don't know. But that movie is another one for me. I took it out when it came out on the special edition release, and I hadn't seen it since I was a kid. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm gonna get hate mail for this podcast. I was just like, whatever. I don't know. My kids liked it, but, you know, they're kids. Anyway, back to popcorn.
I'm so disgusted.
What's your favorite brand of popcorn? I like Orville Redenbacher myself.
I like, what's that one? I think it's Orville Redenbacher Homestyle, I think.
Mm. I also miss the old Jiffy Pop that I would put on the stove and watch the nice foil bubble of kernels just expand.
When I was a kid, my mom had the, you know, the old school where you pour in the kernels and it pops popcorn out. Yes. And I remember, like, I would always like it to be kind of like when you overfill suds in a washer and you know how to, like, overflow. I always loved it when the popcorn would do that. I don't know why that is. But here's another weird fact about me. You know what I love with popcorn, like, to eat at the same time?
What?
Cherry Pop-Tarts.
Okay.
No, it's awkward, but I love it.
You heard it here first, and I think that would probably be an indication that we should wrap up this podcast. And
I think it's an indication that you're afraid of the truth.
I'm afraid of popcorn and cherry Pop-Tarts. That's what I'm afraid of. But I want to, in all seriousness, I'm glad that we talked about this film because it deserves more attention, and I'm glad that you're out there doing something to change that. And I also would suggest that you go to the Wikipedia page for popcorn right this very minute, as you will see my handiwork. But I want to thank you for coming on here and talking about this film. And again, I also want to mention the litany of websites for which you write, in case we didn't fully make it clear at the beginning of the show. The Blood Sprayer, which I also am proud to be a part of, although I've been incredibly swamped lately and have not contributed much to it, for which I am thoroughly embarrassed. But it's the Blood Sprayer. It is bloodsprayer.com. And FrightRags.com, which is Fright-Rags.com, which in all seriousness, you guys put out some incredible, incredible shirts. And actually, I should ask, is there a popcorn shirt? I mean,
right now, in our vintage section, you can get a popcorn shirt. And it's just the movie poster. However, within the next year, hopefully year and a half at most, we will be doing an original popcorn shirt. I'm very excited about it.
That's fantastic. And everybody out there who loves popcorn should buy that shirt. Also, Fangoria.com and Dread Central can boast the horrific, and I mean that in a good way, writing talents of Miss Christy Chet. And, yeah, so thanks for coming and on Conversations of the Dark and talking about popcorn.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
It was a pleasure, Christy.